one at a time. In fact, if I can only get one across to you and leave the others, when we come to the second part, deeper in the second part, it goes more carefully into it, and we can leave it for that. So let me try and explain to you the first part. In order to explain it to you, I have decided to give you a midrash and a gemara and a third gemara and give you the essence of those three maamorei chazal, and you must tell me what you find wrong with them. Something there that isn't right. The first midrash is where Hashem appears to Avraham Avinu, and this is already when he is an old man. He is nearly 100 years old, he is 99 years old. And a lot has happened during his lifetime. There were two events that stand out particularly. The one was when he was a young man, he was taken before Nimrod because he refused to accept the religion that was accepted by the establishment that everybody had, and he was the only one that stood out against it. And he was called before Nimrod, he was the king, and given a chance, you either accept or you are executed. And he decided that he cannot accept and he would rather be executed, and he was thrown into the Kishon HaEsh, into the fiery furnace. And when we speak about Ur Kasdim, Hashem brought Avraham Avinu out of Ur Kasdim, which by the school of archaeology of John and Hopkins is translated a place called Ur Kasdim. The Chazal said us that the word Ur is fire, and from the Ur of the Kasdim, that is from the Babylonians, Hashem took him out of the fire of the Babylonians, and that is a miracle happened to him and he was saved. Then he had this terrible battle with the four kings when his nephew Lot was conquered by them, and he went out to save them. The idea is not it to go out against all kings and to save them, and yet he did it. And he was saved, and all the men that were with him were saved, and he saved his nephew Lot. Those are two happenings that happened. And now, the Midrash is speaking about an incident that is later, when he's 99 years old, when Hashem appears to him, and Hashem says, Avraham, Onohi Morgan Lo, I am a shield to you. Sechorecho harbe me'od, your reward is very much. Al tiro, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Al tiro Avraham, don't be afraid. I am a shield to you. Your reward is very much. So the question that the Midrash deals with is, why is he afraid? Hashem appears to him, why is he afraid? And Hashem has got to reassure him, or assure him, that he mustn't be afraid, his reward is very great. Why is that? And so, Rabbonim in the Midrash gives the answer. Avraham Avinu was afraid, and he said, Yoradti Lechivshan Ro'esh V'Nitzalti, I went down to the fiery furnace and I was saved. I went out to fight a battle against the kings and I was saved. Does that mean to say that I have received my reward in this world and there is nothing for me left in the world to come? Hashem said to him, Al tiro Avraham, don't be afraid Avraham, Onohi Morgan Lo, I'm a shield for you. Whatever I did for you in this world, whatever I did for you in this world, that is ex gratia. Did that for nothing. אבל שחורכו מסופו מאוסית לבוא שחורכו הרבה מועל No reward is there for you in the world to come, and it is very much. That's the first midrash. The second one is when Rabbi Eliezer, who was a very great teacher, and he was a very wealthy man, when he became ill and he was on his deathbed, his disciples came in to see him, and they saw that he was in very great pain, and they all wept, excepting for one of them, and that one was Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva laughed, and his colleague said to him, Akiva, why are you laughing? He said, why are you weeping? They said, our master, who is a sefer Torah, and he's being burnt up in pain, should we not weep? And Rabbi Akiva answered, the reason I'm laughing is because I have watched my master all these years. Nothing ever went wrong with him. His wine never turned to vinegar. His honey never went off. His oil always remained pure. I was afraid that he was being paid for good deeds here upon earth. But now that I see him in such pain, I know that it's not so, that he will get his reward in the world to come. And that is why I'm laughing. The second case. The third case is, on the question, why does it go well with the wicked? Not always, but very often. Why does it go well with them? And one of the answers that the Gemara gives is, they get paid for their good deeds. There has to be payment for everything. You've got to pay for the wrong we did, we get rewarded for the good we did. They've got to be rewarded. So instead of being rewarded on the Olam Habah, they are rewarded here upon earth. Those are the three Ma'amore Chazal. I want you to tell me what you find wrong in all those three. What is wrong? Yes.
In all three, there seems to be an incongruity between this world and what we are expressed in the world to come.
What is the incongruity?
In the first one,
the first one is the case with Avram, the ascension. The
first one
in
Avram troubled me greatly that he was worried that he would lose his faith seemed to have waned enough that he was worried about what was in it for him in the world to come, that he had used it all up. He wanted what happened later.
You've got to find something. I've given you three examples. Something that's difficult to understand, and it's common to those three examples. Correct? Correct. Something that which is difficult to understand is common to each one of the three examples that I've given you. Jenna?
For me, it always is that there is a reward in the world to come.
Yes.
That's hard, I think. And not to know, you certainly have to have a lot of faith to believe that.
But all right, but that is so. That you can take as axiomatic. Reward in the world to come. You probably find it difficult from your less righteous days to believe in eternity at all and the world to come. You've probably been taught that when you die, that's the end of it. Which is not so. Olam Azeh, though that is going to be the Olam Abo. Life only begins after death. This day you have a rest for 2 weeks, which is really 6 weeks. So you have a very good rest, you come refreshed. What would you say? Not yet. Well, I'll help you in so far that I will just point out the place where the difficulty is. Avraham is afraid that he has received his reward, which is, so to say, stored up for him on the Olam Habo. He's being paid for it here. He doesn't want it. The second case is Rabbi Akiva is afraid that his teacher has been paid for his good deeds there upon earth. Rabbi Akiva doesn't want that. And when he sees his teacher suffering, fine, now he's satisfied. He's not being paid for his good deeds here upon earth. The third case is the wicked are paid for their good deeds here upon earth. What would have happened in each one of these three cases? Well, let me take it. The first case, Avraham is satisfied that he's not being paid for the good deed that he did. Yeah, he's not being paid here upon earth. So where is he going to be paid? Rabbi Akiva is satisfied that Rabbi Eliezer, his master, is not being paid for his, hasn't been paid for his good deeds here upon earth. So where is he going to be paid? The wicked man is being paid upon here on earth. Of course he's only too happy about that. If Hashem says to you, where do you want to be paid, here or there? He says, I want it here. I want it. Bad man is with you in the bushes, as Luke said, right, he says. Right. Now, but if he wouldn't have got his reward yet, where would he have got it? Yes, we've got an idea. Everything has got to be paid for. One good deed, it's got to be paid for. You would have got it from the Olam Habo?
We thought that you wouldn't get the Olam Habo. You won't be in the Olam Habo.
Yes. But that's the only way it would have been paid. That's the only way it might have had standing with you. Had the standing with you. It would have had to be paid. But anyway, he doesn't want it. And it's possible that Hashem gives it to him here for another reason, and that is that he's not going to have Olam Habo. But it's got to be paid, so he gives it to him here. Follow?
Yes.
Does it make sense?
Yes.
All right, as long as it makes sense. What is wrong with that? Yes, Sina?
How can one explain the deduction that the donor, he will get the reward in Olam Habo?
Well, one thing is, as Hashem says to Avraham Avinu, he says, that's a matnas chinam, that's an ex-grashim. You know, where did you use the word ex-grashim?
Yes.
That's what it means. That is not out of obligation. That is not because I owe you that. That you get paid, this is just a matnas chinam. This is just a gift from you for no reason at all. Not that you're giving this as a payment. This is a lot of it is given to us as a wherewithal. Just to have the wherewithal to be able to do the things. I should insist to you that we've got food, we've got clothing, we've got shelter, we've got friends, we've got a community. Seize to it to give us the opportunity to function as we should function. That can also be. Thank you, wanted to say something. Now, all right, let me give it to you a little bit more. If Hashem would say to a tzaddik, would you rather that I paid you here on this earth, or would you rather that you get your son the Olam Habo? What would he say?
Olam Habo.
No question. I'd rather get my son the Olam Habo. If Hashem would say to a tzaddik, which would you rather, that you get punished here or you get punished in Olam Habo? Which would he say? Yeah, why?
But it's not in the Olam Habo for Shad.
Short, of course it's short. Rather be punished here. Rather be punished here. It is shorter, of course it's shorter. And the reward, then he should get his reward there also. No, he wants reward to last longer. So is it the same reward that one gets here? The Tzaddik doesn't want it. Why doesn't he want it? A different quality. So what is wrong with all this? So what is wrong with these three cases?
Is it the kind of reward?
Yes, but what is wrong? That is, the same thing is wrong in each one. Yes, you know?
But they're so concerned about the reward. The reward itself is so important to them. The quality of the reward, in other words, they're weighing, they know the reward will be better than Olam Haba. They've done everything right, they're righteous people. So why is it that they're,
I'll give it a try. Yes, but I bet it's more of it what Elizabeth wanted to say at one stage, isn't it?
It was.
You wouldn't say that at one stage. But now you're getting very near to it. So there is a difference in quality. There is a difference in quality. Right now, let us stop there for a moment and examine what proof we have of the difference of quality. Now, let us go to the proof. That is right. The Mishnah says, "Lo for sure, acha shel kovat ruach ba'olam habo, mikol chayei ho'olam hazeh." That 1 hour of spiritual bliss in the olam habo is worth more than a whole lifetime of happiness and pleasure upon this earth. 1 hour, and really, sure, Akash is much less than 1 hour. What does that tell us? Just one short while of happiness and bliss, spiritual happiness, on the Olam Habo is worth all the happiness that one can possibly enjoy in a whole lifetime yet upon earth. What does it tell us about the tell us something about the qualities. I'll give you another example. You know, sometimes the prophets comfort us. This is a time after Tisha B'Av until Rosh Hashanah where the prophets comfort us. These are called the works of weeks of comforting. I'll just read to you what the prophet says about in this week's sefer. I'm going to read it to you in the English, but the Hebrew is so beautiful that it hurts me to have to read it in English. But this is a very beautiful translation. Hashem, the prophet is speaking in the name of Hashem to Jerusalem. Arise, shine. For thy light is come, and the glory of Hashem is risen upon thee. For behold, darkness shall cover the earth, and heavy darkness the peoples. But upon thee Hashem will arise, and his glory shall be seen upon thee. You're going straight for that. Darkness shall cover the earth. Have we ever had a time when there's been darkness has covered the earth, yes, as it does today? When? It's still light. It's not a dark darkness for the peoples. So it's speaking about that there's no enlightenment. And the way people behave, what they do. And just take what is taking place in the whole world. A nation shall walk at thy light, and kings at the brightness of thy rising. Lift up thine eyes round about and see. They all are gathered together and come to thee. Thy sons come from afar, and thy daughters are born on the side. Then shalt thou see and be radiant, and thy heart shall throb and be enlarged, because the abundance of the sea shall be turned unto thee. The ships will bring in their merchandise to you, to Israel. The wealth of the nations shall come unto thee. The caravan of camels shall cover thee. Caravans bring the spices, and of the young camels of Midian and Ephah, all coming from Sheba, they shall bring gold and frankincense, and shall proclaim the praises of the Lord. All the flocks of Kedar shall be gathered together unto thee. The rams of Nebaioth shall minister unto thee. They shall come up with acceptance on mine altar, and I will glorify my glorious house. Who are these that fly as a cloud and as the doves to their place? The Nagisor oil, coming even from California. Surely the isles shall wait for me, and the ships of Tarshish first to bring thy sons from afar. I could go on the whole of the future. That is this week's episode. When is the prophet prophesying? For what time does he prophesy? The times of the ship. He prophesies for the times of the ship. So the Gemara says, when all the prophets prophesy their comforts and comforting the Bnei Yisrael, they are prophesying for the Yabes HaMashiach, but not for Olam Habo. They only speak about the Yabes HaMashiach. When it comes to Olam Habo, there, in Olam Habo, there, they say, Ayin lo ro'oso Elohim zulosecho. No eye has seen the what is on Olam Habo, excepting Hashem, outside of Hashem, Ya'aseh limechak eilev, what he will do for him who waits for him. What he will do, Hashem will do for that person who waits for Hashem. That is, that Yischar is on the Olam Habo. We can't describe it. I am no ruach for Elohim Zulotcha. No human eye can imagine it. Only Hashem. That is the quality of the Yischar on the Olam Habo. Furthermore, it's eternal. Whatever Yischar is given there, it's eternal. Now, can you see what the difficulty is in these three chazal, my more chazal?
No eye has seen.
Hey,
is that the key? No eye has seen, but has sensed, so we don't know. Is that the key to?
It's much more mercenary than that. Say that again, please.
How can
you equate? How could the incentives to be equating Paul and Olympic? Well, do it in a more business-like fashion. It's not equal. How can Hashem give up Rome, Yischariah? How can it compare? If I am the Roso, Zulosochel of the king, no eye can see, no eye can, except in king, Hashem. And therefore, so Akashah Kodesh Ruach, for Olam Habo, Mikol Chaya Olam Hazeh, just 1 hour of Olam Hazeh pleasure there is equal to that one whole life only of pleasure. Is that payment? Is that equity? Is that fairness? Is that justice? How can there even be such a thing? And Rabbi Eliezer, how can he be paid here upon earth? It's not, he's not getting the right thing. It's the same as you pay $1,000 for an article and they give you worth something $5. Is that fair? How can Hashem do that? That is the question. And even a Rosho, you give him his car for Olama, you give him his car, you give him here. Is it fair? And even if he wants it, so why does he want it? Because he doesn't understand it and he doesn't know it. Am I allowed to deceive a person because he doesn't know that what I'm giving him has got no value? I'm not allowed to deceive him. Yes, definitely.
seems to me that this is giving the Russia exactly what he deserves and more. For the
body
to get
them
way more than he actually
has earned. But it's two different things. Two different things. That is the great question. Got the idea? Is that clear? Mm-hmm. Esther, that is really what you were saying, isn't it? That is what it amounts to. That is the great question in all these three Maimonides Hazar. What is Abram afraid of? Will Hashem pay him? What is that? Is this famous? That he saved from the Kibshim Ha'eshim, he saved from that, is that pay? Say if he wins the war with these four kings and rescues his brother, his nephew, is this payment for what he's done? Can't compare what he's paying. Instead of giving him dollars, he gives him, what do they call the Argentinian money? Pesos. When you get your modest, it's going to be worth half the amount. Or zlotys in Poland now. The tomorrow it's worth half the amount. They have such a messy economy that they live. Only this. And he's earned dollars. It doesn't matter, I'll pay you zlotys. It's just not right. That is the question. Yes, Eva?
Yeah, we're going to talk as things as you. We mustn't function on this earth thinking that what we do is going to be rewarded so much and so much.
Very good. Now we come to the next thing. What is schar and onesh? What is reward and punishment? Now we come to the next one. Now, when we went to preschool and nursery school, we were taught that if you are good, you get rewarded. What do you get rewarded? A child is good, so he gets candy. He goes older, he's good, he gets a bicycle. He goes older, he's good, or she's good, with a motor car. But getting a motor car, a young boy goes to yeshiva and knows the whole of Mishnais, knows it by heart, knows two Gemaras by heart, knows it very well. His father's so happy with him, gives him a car. Now you can have a car, you've got your own car, you can go to yeshiva, knows that he's used it well. Has the car got anything to do with the Gemaras that he studied with Mishnais? Nothing at all. That is our idea of studying Torah. Now comes a very important principle, and that is the schar and onesh of the Torah. The schar and onesh of the Torah is when we do that which we are supposed to do. We have created the schar. That's what it is. So it's a dovr shel mamash. It's a thing that exists. You can't help it. I can say a thousand times, I don't want any skunk for what I'm doing. That's not the point. You have created something. That is what is done. Now, it's like, of course, only Olam Hazeh, don't forget, there is nothing material there. It's all in the abstract, but as we will find out later this evening, what is in the abstract is more real than what is in the concrete. But that we shall discuss later. So there is nothing material. There is no time and no space. Those are all concepts that are created. Now, here on earth, we need certain things. We need parnosa, we need food, we need clothing, we need shelter, we need an environment, we need friends. El Chadrusa, El Misiso. Must have friends. in the Olam Haba, it's the same thing. We need certain things. Now, it's impossible to know exactly what it is that we need, but it is the equivalent of what we've got here. In the same way as we need a home in which will act as our dwelling and as our abode, on the Olam Haba, the soul needs an abode. He does his mitzvahs, it's a brick, it's two bricks, it's a whole row of bricks, it's a whole wall, and gradually it all gets built up. When it comes on the Olam Haba, there it is. Of course, it is speaking figuratively, that there is a correlation and there is a parallelism. That is what schar and onesh is. So Sima, in answer to your question, it's not. We've got to be loki yuka vodi mamashamshim esu rava tanas mechaber klas. We mustn't be like servants who are just waiting for the reward, waiting for the paycheck at the end of the month or at the end of the fortnight. We're not like that. Or for the year bonus. We're not like that. We serve Hashem only because we serve Hashem. What happens is, that is a cause and an effect. Whether we want it or we don't want it, but that is happening, that is what is building up. So, the question becomes even stronger. So I won't have it on the Olam Haba, so what's it all about? Is that what Hashem does with me? And how can it be instead of that? It's so different. How can it be? That is the big question. Now, let us leave it at that. Elizabeth, you've also had 2 weeks holiday, which is really 6 weeks holiday, haven't you? To no fault of your own. Sorry about the accident. Now, let us take it a little bit further from there. We have said that on the Olam Haba there is nothing concrete. Now it takes a tremendous amount of work on oneself to know that and to understand it. Know it, you can know it, but to understand it takes a tremendous amount of work. So I try and give you the understanding of it. For example, an example that I gave you last week. Beethoven writes a symphony, and he's going again. He writes a second symphony. By the time he is writing the later symphonies, he is stone deaf. Can't hear a thing, and he continues to write symphonies. How does he know what he is writing? When he makes that score, when he writes the score, how does he know that it sounds right? He can't hear. Absolutely right. It's in his mind. Does he hear it or doesn't he hear it? He hears it with his mind's ear. Of course he hears it. He hears every note, and as he is writing, no, crosses that out. Have you ever seen a facsimile of one of his symphonies? Crosses it out, puts in something else. Wasn't right. But he can't hear the sound. So where has he got his own symphony? In his mind. Is it abstract or concrete? Is it real or isn't it real? It's real, of course it's real. And then he puts it down on paper, now it's concrete. Which is the more real? The symphony in the mind or the symphony on the paper, which is more real? Of course it's in the mind. The paper is just a transcription. That's all it is. It's a substitute, it's a transcription. But which is more real? And that is completely abstract. So what is abstract is more real. This world is a world of material. I'm trying to avoid the world of materialism because it's too obvious that the world of materialism. This is a world of material. It's a material world. It's a physical world. And you remember we have spoken, we've drawn our diagram of the spiritual universe and of the physical universe. This is the physical universe. So, in the spiritual universe, there's nothing material, nothing physical, only that is only on the physical universe. But with in man, has anybody got the chart here? If you just look at the chart. Now, we've got our physical universe, and there is man. Earth, water, air, the elements. All the elements are found there. And there they come down to make man, to make the body of man. But there is also the neshama from Hashem. And that is the neshama, and the neshama goes into the soul. The neshama is completely spiritual. Nothing physical about it. The biological soul, the life that is in an animal, and that life is in a human being also, that the Derech Hashem told us, don't confuse that, don't confuse the nefesh with the neshama. That's the nefesh. Every animal has got a nefesh, the human being has also got a nefesh. But over and above that, the human being has got a neshama. And that is completely spiritual. So, where is the reality? The reality is in the abstract. What is really the man? If he loses his neshama, and he's reduced to a nefesh, he's an animal, he's less than an animal. Unfortunately, there are such cases we don't understand it. We don't understand it. But we know that a person is reduced to, an animal. In other ways, also a person can use his neshama. And he becomes nothing more than an animal. But once a person has got a neshama, completely abstract, the Derech Hashem says that the nefesh in the mercy is that physical. That is physical. How could it be physical? I taste fruit. What do I enjoy about the fruit? It's fruit.
The taste.
The taste. The taste. Is the taste physical or spiritual? Of course it's physically real. Does it belong to the physical world or to the spiritual world? It belongs to the physical world. But it isn't physical. So the nefesh of the animal isn't spiritual, it's physical. But you can't see it or anything. It's the same as the taste. It belongs to the animal. That is the life. So that is the physical universe and the spiritual universe. Those are the differences between them. Yeah. So what now we are coming to the stage now where, as before, I was working on the basis with you that the physical universe and the spiritual universe are completely apart and there's no connection between the two. And I remember explaining to you and telling you about the buildings, the plans of which are in Hamburg, putting up four buildings of 800 stories high. There, when I put up a building, I work on the basis of a straight line. with our Buddha, two stories, three stories, and work on the basis of a straight line. But if you put up 800 stories, you can't work on the basis of a straight line anymore. There isn't such a thing as a straight line. So up to now, we've worked the physical universe, the spiritual universe, entirely different. And that's the way most people understand it. There's no connection between the two. We've already seen that there is some kind of a connection in matter. And now we're going to find that there are other connections also. We are finding now that a person does a mitzvah upon earth and he creates something. A Dovish Mama, she creates something that is reality, that is real. It is abstract, but in the abstract it is more real than it is in the concrete. But he has created that. And when it comes onto the Olam Habo, it is there. It is that that Hashem prays in Zarcha. Now you can say that he doesn't get that. And he can't pray in that because that is abstract and yet it's concrete. Very difficult to understand. Now that is what I'm trying to get across to you now. Until now is it all right? Can you understand it until now? Or are you still finding it difficult?
What
was the meaning of
it? I'm still
saying. Even this little bit of
abstract
you do now.
But I'm making it. You're making it.
You're
making it.
But I'm just explaining to you how it is. You see how it is.
Now,
let us go a little bit further. We've got to understand these my morals as well. So what is it that I've wrong? That great wisdom. That great understanding. How is it possible that Shem pays? How is it possible that Shem pays the Rosh for Yeravet? What is it that happens? What happens is really this. Do you remember I told you a story from the Gemara about, was it Rabbi Barachon or Rabbi Samina, Rabbi Barachon, I think it was very, very poor. Didn't have anything to eat in his cottage, I think. So he goes out of town and he prays to Hashem. What can I do? And as he prays, there's a precious stone falls down in front of him. Knows it's from Hashem, picks up the stone, goes to the shulchan, he goes to the bank, and changes it to his money, and he goes and he buys a wonderful Shabbos. Takes it over to his wife. This is what I said. I know you did this to him. Where did it come from? He said, what does it matter to you? Enjoy it. It's here. I will not have it until you tell me from where it comes. So he makes it easy for quite the shots. Where did it come from? Going to the store. He said, do you know what you have done? That means this comes from our what we have earned here for the Olam my boy. That's what we're getting here. He said, you've got to promise me that you're going to go back to the banker, redeem that, and get it back to a ship if you take one. Well, he's got to borrow money now. He's even going to get it back. And he gets it back and he pays to a ship. And a hand comes and takes the dinner. And the Gemara ends to say, the second miracle was greater than the first miracle. Remember I told you that story?
Yes.
Long before Spinner came back. Still about that. What is it? And she still has not seen this. Now comes the point. If Hashem does pass from birth, it would be 44 or 45, probably 44. Now, we've got a verse here that in Samuel is slightly different from what it is in Psalms. in Samuel, it is verse 44, yes. Now, you've got it in Samuel, Tatefateni Merivei Ami, and you have delivered me from the contentions of my people, from the quarrelings of my people. Tishbereini Lerosh Goyim, you have preserved me to be the head of nations. Am lo yodati ya'abduni, a people that I know not will serve me or have served me. A people that I know not do serve me. Now let us take the first line of the verse. The verse consists of three lines. The first one verse says, and you have saved me, you have redeemed me from the quarrelings of my people. In Tehillim, the same verse is, you have saved me from the quarreling of nations. So it's a very great difference. And the Gemara, the Midrash really, makes David say rather a strange thing, and it explains it as follows. When David said that Hashem should deliver him from the striving, from the contentions of my people, Hashem has delivered me from the contentions of my people, from the quarrelings of my people. David HaMelech said, Shelo yehei lohem din etzli, velo etzli din imohem. He said, I don't want to have any lawsuit with them, and I don't want them to have any lawsuit with me. And he goes further, and the latter part we'll understand. Is there any suggestions that anybody can make about what is he saying? That I shouldn't have any lawsuit with them. And that what is water? It is hydrogen and oxygen. But hydrogen and oxygen are gases, and water is a liquid. Well, Hashem wanted it for this earth. For this earth, it has to be in a physical form. So that, and what is hydrogen and what is oxygen? They are forces. Electrons going about all the time, alive. Is it concrete or is it abstract? So you go right back and you can take the atom apart with all its particles, with all the elementary particles, take it all apart, and there's no matter there at all. It's all forces. But here upon earth, it's got to be in a liquid form. So, what is not physical, when it comes down to earth, it is clothed in a physical form, because this is the physical universe. And in the physical universe, it must be in this form. Then it can be understood. That's the way it's got to be, dealing with the physical universe. That is as far as I'm taking it to the future. And that is the beginning of the Shtashus. So we find that whatever there is here comes down to us in a physical form, that there is a world to which it belongs before it is in this physical form. And I've given you an example in music, and I've given you an example in literature, I've given you an example in music, and you'll find exactly the same thing in art. That is in the mind of the artist. Whether it is a picture, whether it is a sculpture, or whether it is a building. whether it is an artist, whether it is a sculptor, or whether it is an architect. First of all, it is in the mind, and then it is the plan on the paper, and then afterwards it is waiting for something. And these are distinct worlds. Now, we've got to attune ourselves to the idea that everything that we have here upon earth is here because it's in a physical form. It must be adapted to this earth so that it conforms with everything that is here and it accords with everything that is here. Then we can work. That is the world in which we function. But even in this world in which we function, we find that we are really dealing with greater and deeper and more real worlds. That world that exists in the mind. But that is only the beginning of the whole subject of Ishkashas. And so, if Hashem pays us for our good deeds, we get that we actually created. We get that given to us, but in an earthly form. And now, mutatis mutandis. You don't know what that means? Where did you go to nursery school?
Oh,
of course. But even if it's a very low standard, now. When you apply it, diet to the reverse now, to punishment. When we get a punishment here, it is a punishment which we are getting, which we should get on the Olam Haba, and we get it here, and that's what we wanted. It's the taken, that punishment that we have to get there, taken there, or part of that punishment is taken. That's not a whole of it. The part of it is taken, but it's exactly what we are supposed to get. But it has to be transformed into a physical form, and that is the way it comes to us. The distress that we suffer, the anguish, the aggravation on the Olam Haba, it's something quite different. But here, when it comes down to earth, it's in this form. Now, just to say, if you take from your water, which can be done very easily, take your water and extract the hydrogen and the oxygen, and you've got it in a jar, and you tell somebody, you see that water that we have here, down, put it into a jar, it doesn't see anything. It's got no color, it's got no taste, it doesn't see anything at all. And you say, this is the water that was in the jar. Can it be? Then how can it be? That's what it is. It's the same water that you've got, but it's not the same. And if you go and you separate the molecules, when you've separated the molecules, and if you now separate the atoms, you know what you get? A different world altogether, but it's the same. But when it comes down to earth, this is the way it comes down to us. Do you understand that? No, you are my guinea sheep. That's all. Yes, it is.
Excuse me, God. When you gave me the example of the artist, the composer.
Yes.
In the more abstract, in the mind, it's certainly closer to the source. So it's more real. And if someone does the deed, if someone has expands with neshama and works with neshama and does the good deed in this form, in the form that he knows he can do physically, just for Hashem, then he's closer to the source as well. And But there's a qualitative difference, certainly, between creating something with beauty and a cleaving to the shame. I see, it troubles me that the intellect is the vehicle.
That's what you said. That's what the, what you call, that is what the Dharma said about the intellect. That's what he said. It's not being equated. I don't quite know what he said. He says, as man grows, the intellect becomes stronger, according, in each person, according to his makeup. The intellect in one person can be it can be quite different from another person. So, and if he grows in wisdom and he studies it and strengthens itself in his ways, and I explained to you when we did that was speaking about the table, then he can overcome his nature and so forth, and this brings him to Kirvas Hashem, to closeness to Hashem, and the closeness to Hashem to perfection. So, what do you find difficult about that, Elizabeth?
That I find very clear.
But then, what is the difficulty?
When you talk about the art, about literature, about all those things, about the world of the mind.
Yes.
I guess because it's using the intellect as the same vehicle, but I don't see that the same. This is very clear to me that it's as if creating beauty, really creating something, is as it is compared to what
he says that the mind can do very great things, but it can be altogether wrong. It can use the great things for completely the wrong purpose.
Mm.
And that is only with Torah. So you get a person like Goethe, look what he created. But he wasn't at all a nice character. That's what he says.
Mm.
That the intellect itself is encased in materialism. In gross materialism, it's encased in the body, with the Yetzer Hara and everything. There can be the intellect can achieve great things, but if there isn't the Torah, that you can't have. And that you see over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And people say to me, you know, one sees the a rabbi has an affair with the vice president's wife, and he's expelled from the president. You see, it happens with rabbis. My dear Teddy, it doesn't happen with rabbis. You're telling me what happens to a goat happens to a rabbi. He's a goat, he's not a rabbi. He never kept Shabbat. He didn't eat kosher. What are you telling me he's a rabbi? He doesn't know Gemara. He's never studied Torah. He doesn't know what Torah is. Doesn't believe in Torah. Doesn't believe in Torah in Hashem. What are you talking about? With our people, has it ever happened anything like that? Never anything happened like that. Never had a case of anything like that. Rabbi embezzled money. Never had a case of anything like that. How can you speak like that? When we used to go on our holidays when we were in Kerala, we used to go and visit little villages. Why did we go to them? Just to go in and see the rabbi. We never heard of the rabbi before. But we went to the village, paid our respects to the rabbi. For two reasons. First of all, we knew what it meant to him. Since we were a little closer, and for ourselves, we knew that we would be with greatness. That we knew. Didn't know who he was, we didn't know. But we were there, we knew we were with greatness. And so it was. And what I learned from those visits, little towns, Lukni, Tvishit, And Majek, when Majek was a little bit bigger of him, he always went into the house. He used to go twos and threes, tell you, what an experience it was. Never had anything like that. That is where they stole. You know, I've got a friend. He was a professor at Oxford University, but a very important professor at Oxford University. Now he's retired. He's older than I am. I think quite a lot older than I am. Considered a lot older than I am. When I started with my work in Johannesburg, he was already famous. Oh, he was a lot older than I was. The first time I met where the strength was, and I think he told my respects to him, and that's the love. And he was there. That's the first after that first meeting. Now, I came to visit him once in Oxford. He had a very important position in Johannesburg, and he left me to become a professor in Oxford. You know, becoming a professor in Oxford used to be in the United States. And he left it, and I came there, he was in a dreadful state. And he told me the story, trying to relax. He was telling me what a change there had come in Oxford. He had been there several years now. He said, but such a change had come over Oxford. He said, when he came there, he was put onto a certain commission or committee to decide on doing the scholarship study. And the scholarships were very big scholarships. They saw a person feel comfortably all the time that he was at Oxford. And he was at Oxford, he had two rooms. He had his bedroom, and he had his study, and he had a servant. That was how it was. And all this was paid for through his scholarship. And he tells me the story that he is in a commission, and they get the names of the people. On the name, he sees the name Kate. Looks to that's the only Jewish name. He said, I'm going for Kate. And this is what this professor tells me. Why am I going for Caleb? He's a Jew. Nobody else is going to go for him. So at least let him find that I support him. He tells me the story. He said they go in, this person comes in, young man comes in, beautifully dressed and carries himself well, sits down there, interviews him, knows all the right answers, confidence. Then they call him so-and-so Caleb. Says, in walks a little fella with glasses, and he stands at the door and he looks round. And so the chairman says, Mr. Cohen, well, please come in and take a seat. He looks round, frightened little fella, and he sits down. He says, Mr. Cohen, they start asking him questions. He said, from where are you? He said, I'm from the Bronx. From New York. There's nothing wrong with coming from the Bronx. I'm from the Bronx. They said, Mr. Cohen, how'd you come here? What made you come here? He said, now these are Englishmen and they speak English, their language that you probably never heard spoken. What made you come here, Mr. Cohen? He said, well, in a very heavy Bronx accent, I don't know what it is, but this professor told me. He said, well, I was in the war, and when I left the army, I got a sum of money, and I decided to budget him and come to England and see what he's like. So, professor tells me, he's so embarrassed for it. I said, how long have you been here? He said, oh, I've been here something 2 years. I said, where have you been? He said, in Aberdeen. Aberdeen's in Scotland. I said, what have you been doing in Aberdeen? He said, oh, at the university there. I said, what are you studying in mathematics? Oh, yeah. He said, and what have you been? He said, I'm working for my PhD now. I said, and is it working out? So now the mathematics specialist takes over. What is your thesis on? Is it working out? He says, no, it's not working out. He says, you think you're going to work it out? I don't think it's going to work out. He said, are you happy in Aberdeen? He said, no, not really. He said, why aren't you happy? He said, I don't get on with my professor. I don't get on with my supervisor. We don't get on together. So this is going on, you see. Then the professor goes, he gets the scholarship. He said, now why do you think you got the scholarship? I said, I don't know. Only for one reason. He said, he was dead honest. That's what they wanted. That's what intrigued them. There was no putting on anything. There was nothing that wasn't true. This man is dead honest. He gets the scholarship. And then Professor Taylor did he said, but that's gone. Couple of years. He said, that's gone. Isn't there any more? Nothing. At one university, there was a professor, and he ran off with Solomon Schefter's daughter, who was a very woman. The story was written, her husband's biography was written, and this biography was given to me. I knew the husband. And this biography was given to me, and I read it, and I gave it to the person. I stood at the end of the chapter, and I said, this chapter 4 is so beautifully written. I said, that's not the person who wrote the book, didn't write chapter 4. He said, you know, I don't know how you could have seen it. I said, but nothing. He said, this chapter was written by the professor who ran away with his man's wife. And he wrote that episode, he wrote about this. But that episode of that man at the university couldn't stay on. That was finished, and his career was finished. Today, and this is my time, today, doesn't matter. This is what this professor told me to ask him. He said, these things don't matter anymore. Just go on. Yeah, that is without the tail. Yeah. Bertrand Russell was a humanist. And he did the most terrible things. He said, I can't see anything wrong with that. He said, but look at the person in the hurt. He said, all right, the person gets hurt, but it makes somebody else happy. He couldn't see anything wrong with it. Maybe you can't do that. But it's not that you can't do it. The one who is in favor doesn't want to do it. That's what it is. Of course you can create all these wonderful things. It doesn't go any further. It doesn't go any further. Better creates fast, yet it evades. It evades with his mind, but doesn't go any deeper any further. Other, it goes much further. Anyway, so I've taken you to a couple of worlds beyond the actual world of matter and materialism in which we live. And that is the beginning of the Gestaltism. Yes, of course, yes.
Considering the story of the precious stone and the rabbi who was in dire straits, when we're praying to Master Hashem for favors on this earth, asking for help, or...
You see, we ask him which way the answer we ask. But I've spoken about this, and I remember there was a person who had learned in Yeshiva. He was very taken aback from by it. When one asks for knowledge from Hashem, and when he's working for the examination, it's no good thinking I want it for the examination. That's not the purpose of that. The purpose is to understand the Torah. And it's very difficult to understand it. That is what we ask for. And Ashivayin Ovin Yisarosecha, we ask Hashem to bring us back to his Torah. We ask Rafa'in Hashem, give us help. But we want help in order that we should be able to live a life of Torah. Live a life of Torah, study the Torah, carry out the Torah, bring children into this world that keeps the Torah. That is what we ask for. every one of those brachas are related to what we call the realities of life. Those are the realities. For a person to ask for wealth, there's one man who told me that he's praying very hard. He said, what are you praying hard for? He's praying that he wins some great thing. I said, why? Why do you want that? He said, what I will give Yeshiva. He said, rather shortcut it. Pray that the Yeshiva should get it. Doesn't matter. If that's what you're interested, what do you want it for? Pray that the Yeshiva get it. So that is it. You can certainly pray for health, for parnosis, certainly. That we've got parnosis, certainly. That we've got good children, certainly you pray for that. But for wealth, that is, for life, certainly you can pray for that. Yes?
Well, then also, that disturbed me, the story of the jewel that was found. I was thinking, you know, that could have, instead of giving it back to Hashem, if that was his portion in the long haul, that was his family's portion, it was his wife's portion.
It's his portion, yes. His portion, yes. Although she said, I don't want a two-legged table. That we'll be sitting at a two-legged table. She said, I don't want that.
Right. I'm sure he shared his portion with
you. Yes.
He could have given that to Tzedakah.
You know, that is a very big mistake that people make. They want to honor a person, so they plant trees in his way for him. And they present him 60 trees. That's a very bad policy. You want to give tzedakah, give tzedakah. You want to honor this person, give him something personal. You follow? It doesn't work like that. You can't just say, I'll give it to tzedakah instead.
Or
it doesn't work. So that she's given it to tzedakah, so she'll get something for tzedakah, but it's got nothing to do with this.
Or to take it and build a hospital, or to...
That's not the same. It's not that. So you get rewarded for building a hospital. But you've taken it already. That's what you've had before. That's the God.
But certainly everything comes from Hashem. Really, yes. Even a man, so-called Horatio Alger, who works with his own hands, it's not his. It's Hashem. Everything moves. So his $1 million is from Hashem. That's the same as the jewel. And yet if he keeps it and says, if he doesn't give that fellowship back to Hashem, then really he doesn't get it all in the ball because he...
No, that's a separate thing. And if he takes that he has earned and he builds hospitals with it, then he gets his rewards for building hospitals, right?
Even though it was completely from Hashem that he was able to have...
That's all right, but that... He's the trustee and he's got to do it. He could have had his free determination of will, could have done otherwise. Right. All right. Carry on.
Something we're upset. Really get a nervous and sweat a lot of things.
As well?
Yes. Tonight, really get a nervous. It's something that...
Awareness or closeness? All right.
Question of the law. The law says that we should work in the way that we do things for cause and effect, not to get a reward. And the law says that when a child is little and they do something good, they get a reward, and that we should not work like that. And the law said, but we don't work like that. That we should do things that are well for Hashem. But
I am not most people. I don't know. I don't know what most people are. I didn't start it like that. I started off working thinking that I'd get a reward right. But as I grew further, I realized that that's not what it is. You follow? That's what I started. Now, there are just a couple of things that I want to mention. First of all, I want to congratulate Hannah Marsh. There was a... this yesterday afternoon. I'm very sorry I wasn't there, but I had a report that it went off extremely well, and I'm very pleased with the mother. I was Sunday to the Brisbane Sunday morning up north, where he was, the Bohrer was the same Noel, and I was very pleased with the work he did. So he would present himself to the best in fact, and if the best was satisfied, then he would be our official Noel. Not to go any further, which is a very great thing. That is one thing to say. Congratulations on this. I want to congratulate Jordana, who was the wife of the Sunday. David Davis was the Sunday, Mazel Tov to you. And there I want to speak to you for a few moments a personal problem that I have. And this has become a terribly serious problem. I don't think anybody is aware of it. And that is that I start work at my desk at 8 o'clock in the morning, after I've given a shiur or two. Then I start at my desk, and the phone starts ringing. And it doesn't stop until 2 o'clock. I can't get down to any work at all. I'm writing a letter, I can't get through the letter. I can't get any learning done. I've got to prepare shiurim, I've got to prepare sermons. Can't get anything done. It goes on till 2 o'clock. Now, if it's an emergency, by all means. If it's a shiloh, by all means. If it can't wait, by all means. But I'm asking you to help me. I just can't manage it anymore. I'm getting nothing done. Nothing done for myself without any question. For months, I haven't even been looking at my bank statements. I haven't got the time. I try and snatch every little moment that I can prepare a shield. But I've got to work for myself also. I've got to study for myself. I've got to learn for myself. I don't get a chance. It doesn't stop. Now, you know when you phone me, there's always somebody else on the line waiting. You ever phone me and there isn't an introduction? And this goes on from 8:32 without a stop. Nothing done. I just can't go on like this. I haven't got a secretary. In Johannesburg I had a congregation of thousands, and I worked for the hotel. The building was a building for the country. But I had a secretary who attended to every call that came in. I had a filing clerk who did all the filing. So there was at least time. Sometimes I get a call from somebody asking for a telephone number. Do I know that person's telephone number? So I've got to go and look up and try and find the telephone number. It's just impossible. And I'm asking you please to help me. At least give me those 3 hours until 12 that I can carry on with my work. If it's a shiloh, by all means, an emergency, by all means. But otherwise, please, just help me with that. So I tell them, for myself, I've got nothing done at all. I don't get the time to go and have a haircut. I get nothing, no time for myself at all. And it's just the phone from early morning, it goes on and on and on. It has to stop at 2 o'clock. So if you could try and make it from 12 to 1, that would help me a tremendous amount. From midday to 1, that you phone. But at least I've got the morning that I can work in the morning. And even the morning sometimes I've got to give appointments. And people see me, some people do, and go, I've got to give the morning appointment also. Please try and help. Yes.
Is there a reason
that
the shore cannot hire a secretary after all?
It's a question of, because we're struggling with our building fund. And I'm dead scared we won't have the money to do the hall. And if we don't use the social hall now, besides not being able to expand, it'll cost at least twice as much to do it afterwards. Now we do it all together. It'll cost at least twice as much. And the money is just not coming in. And somebody suggested that I'm going off four people for money. I'm not going to do that. I've got the lion's share. I can't go around collecting money. And somebody actually had the boldness to suggest to me how grind up I should be the person to go and ask the people to get money. I'm not here for that purpose. But it's not coming in. And it's giving you a lot of aggravation. So all these things are there, but anyway, I'm not asking you to do anything about that. I'm asking you just to help me with this. But I just haven't. You suffer in the end. I can't give you at my best if I can't learn on my own, if I can't produce on my own. Now, I've got to have that time. When Johanna said it was a thing, it was easy. I used to do my work, I gave my shiurim, I had hours for myself. Next morning I came, the secretary had all the things, what you attend to, what you didn't, what you couldn't attend to, where it was. It was a different thing. It was a big congregation, it was a very wealthy congregation, it was very difficult to do these things. And my secretary wasn't the secretary of the shul. She was only my secretary and the filing clerk. Filing clerk did work for the shul. But anyway, she knew that when it came to my filing, she got my filing on my desk, but she took the filing, and she attended if I wanted anything, I just had to ask her, she said, where did it go? She said, well, quite a different thing. Of course, we can't afford it here. But then, if you could only help them with that. Thank you, Moses.
I just wanted to know if there's a shiur being given by the Rabbitson next week at 8:15, and it's entitled, there's more to Russia than there's more.
Otherwise, it's nothing. I know of only one example of zealousness in the faith, and that is Pinchas. Don't know of any other example. It's got to be 100% pure. Then it's fun to us. And you ask the people who told you, their rabbis told you. You can be quite sure it's not the rabbis that stand at the top of the pyramid, which now is on the bottom. It's not those that are sick. But those are not the ones they follow. And this is something that's really sad. This is something that's sad. But however sad it is, you've got a lot to be thankful for, and there's a lot to expect, because there's so much good that is being done. And now David Amelech says that Migdal Yeshua's Malko, Magdal Yeshua's Malko. In the one he says, his king is a tower of salvation. In the other one is, his king makes salvation to great. And this is speaking about Insecheted in Shifoni, the signless to his Melech HaMashiach. And David is speaking about the time when Mashiach will come. And of course, we don't know exactly when Mashiach is going to come, we don't know how he's going to come. There are only a few things that we are aware of, and we are aware of certain possibilities. We know that he can come. In the Gemara it says, either the world will be completely good or it will be completely bad. And the Chofetz Chaim teaches us that it doesn't mean it will be completely good or completely bad. It says it will be completely good and completely bad at the same time, which is something quite different. And that is more or less what is happening in the world today. That you get a polarization. People are going to one extreme or to the other. Either they are following the Torah or they're going away from the Torah. And so you've got both things happening simultaneously. You haven't got anything in the middle. Either going one way or going the other way. In the middle there's very little, and it doesn't last. The people that want to sort of be not to prune and not to not prune, and it's not carrying out. The people who say we've got enough Torah, we don't want to go any further, this is what we've got, that is all there is to it, those people First of all, don't remain where they are. They slip back. It's like a motorboat that's climbing up a hill. It's got no brakes. And you stop it on the incline. It's not going to remain there to slip down. And that is what happens with a person who tries to stop halfway. Can't do that. So we've got the two extremes today. Either those who are going back to Torah or those who are going away from Torah. That is what we've got. And in one place it says, Magdil, and that is that going towards the time of Messiah, it will go by degrees. Magdil means he will make grow, his king will make grow salvation. It will go by degrees. When Mashiach comes, it will be meant to go. That is, it will already, then it will go very quickly. Once Mashiach comes, but until Mashiach comes, it's going to go very slow. And you don't have to worry about how would you know whether it's Mashiach or not. There will just be no doubt. But you don't have to worry. When it comes, there will be just no doubt about it. And that finishes the chapter, but we're not altogether finished with the narrative part of it. Now, before we go any further, I just want to say a few words about Magdil Rishus, that it goes by degree, not all at the same time. If you have a question asked me, not from this community, by women who were expecting babies, about fasting on Shavuot of the Kippur. And each case is a case on its own. You can't give one rule for everybody. It depends on another thing. It's the people who are expecting babies and feeding mothers. And it depends on the circumstances, it depends on the person,